Welcome to Insight Exchange, presented by LEK Consulting, a global strategy consultancy that helps business leaders seize competitive advantage and amplify growth. Insight Exchange is our forum dedicated to the free, open, and unbiased exchange of the insights and ideas that are driving business into the future. We exchange insights with the brightest minds of the day, the most daring innovators, and the doers who are right now rebuilding the world around us.
Welcome to an LEK podcast covering the second installment of Looking Ahead, the U.S. Provider Landscape in 2035, entitled Swim Lanes. In part one of the series, LEK analyzed 30 potential spend-reducing initiatives and determined that a significant bend in the cost curve is unlikely. At its current pace, U.S. healthcare expenditures are expected to reach $8 trillion by 2035, which would represent over 20% of the forecasted total U.S. GDP. It should therefore come as no surprise that a variety of investors and scaled organizations are entering the care delivery market to capture a slice of the ever-increasing pie. Payers, like Optum, have been growing their care delivery footprint over several years. Big box retailers and big tech like Walmart, Amazon, and Apple are making some big bets. And of course, you can't overlook the ever-increasing presence of private equity. We refer to the entry of these organizations into care delivery as swim lane hopping. Healthcare stakeholders have had distinct swim lanes in which they have historically operated: payers and funding care, providers and care delivery, and retailers and drug sales. However, that framework no longer holds as a variety of different organizations are jumping in, out, and across the pool into care delivery. In part two of the series, LEK speaks to the risks that traditional providers may face due to swim lane hopping and the opportunities that may emerge as the care delivery landscape continues to evolve to 2035. My name is Rosie Vig, and I'm a managing director in LEK Consulting's healthcare services practice focused on provider organizations. To dive into these findings and implications for provider organizations in more detail, I am joined by three experts in the U.S. healthcare provider landscape: Vance Moore, Fraser Dorey, and Kevin Grabenstatter. Vance, Fraser, and Kevin, it's a pleasure to have you on this podcast. Would you please take a moment to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Vance Moore. I'm an executive in residence with LEK, also a part of the executive network. Spent about 35 years in healthcare, first 10 years of it with Baxter, Allegiance, and Cardinal on the distributor side of the table in the med-surg world. Also did a stint with UPS Logistics and pharmaceutical distribution. And then the last 19 years of my career was with Mercy Health in St. Louis, helping them and kind of design and execute a new supply chain operations, and ended up retiring from there and a couple of years ago as a divisional president.
Thanks, Vance. Fraser Dorey. I'm a managing director at LEK Consulting and a member of our healthcare services practice. Focus on advising healthcare provider organizations on growth, strategy, and a range of operational topics.
And I'm Kevin Grabenstatter, partner and managing director with the healthcare services practice at LEK and provider practice lead for LEK. I have a particular interest and passion around growth strategy in the healthcare services landscape.
Thank you. Let's start with payers. Fraser, we are increasingly seeing the lines blur between payers and providers. How do you expect the payer's role in care delivery to evolve by 2035? And what does that mean for traditional provider organizations?
Yeah, absolutely, Rosie. The line between care delivery and care financing is blurring as value-based contracting mechanisms slowly gain share. But more recently, we've also seen a significant uptick in hopping between the payer and provider swim lane. Payers have acquired a broad range of care delivery organizations. They've been focused on primary care and chronic condition care, but are starting to make forays into specialty care as well. The clearest example of this is UnitedHealth's Optum, which, with now more than 70,000 employed or affiliated physicians, is the largest employer of physicians in the U.S. And they've acquired $10 billion worth of provider organizations in the last 12 months, including Kelsey Seybold, LHC Group, and Amedisys, pending regulatory review. CVS Aetna has acquired Oak Street and Signify, another $20 billion of acquisitions. Humana has acquired Kindred at Home and established a Medicare Advantage focused primary care arm in CenterWell, And health systems and provider organizations clearly need to pay attention to this activity and develop strategies to respond if an increasing share of their local referral network becomes payer employed. But we also see pretty great opportunity here for proactive provider organizations and health systems to partner with payer organizations, and in doing so, drive mutual growth without the need for such significant capital outlays. Because we think that over the next 10 to 15 years, the payer care delivery acquisition engines that have been so effective of late will start to top out. And that's going to be because the number of scaled organizations that they can go out and acquire is shrinking with every acquisition that they make. Regulators are paying increasing attention to these proposed transactions, and it's been difficult for payers to drive the desired results from behind internal firewalls between the payer and provider organizations that exist within their conglomerate. Payer-provider joint ventures and VBC enablement or managed services organization models offer a much more capital-effective mechanism by which to drive growth, and a much more capital-effective mechanism by which payers can access care delivery expertise and access the care delivery expertise of significant health systems. We've seen successful examples of this already: Banner Aetna, Ascension Centene, Duke, Blue Cross North Carolina, and we think there'll be a lot more opportunities for proactive health systems and provider groups to creatively partner with payers as an alternative to M&A. And we've been helping some clients assess these options already.
Thank you, Fraser. Vance, big box retailers and big tech have been venturing into care delivery. How do you see this playing out over the next 10 years? And what does it mean for traditional provider organizations?
I think big box retail and tech have been in the healthcare industry for quite a while, and they've had fits and starts and will continue to make investments, and they will continue to provide services, honestly, that are much more convenient than the traditional healthcare world has provided in the past. You look at Walmart. I read a report recently, and Walmart has more than 300 million customer visits per month to their stores. And that's just huge when you compare even online traffic. And so I think it's almost irresponsible for a retailer not to take advantage of healthcare, because healthcare, as mentioned earlier, is about 20% of gross domestic product going forward. So they have to do this. And I think they're also taking advantage of the convenience associated with when you go to a Walmart or you go to tech, to being able to interface and get all your needs. The interesting thing that I see happening is, you know, something that's recently been marketing Walmart in home is they're expanding their capabilities to make deliveries to the home with food and things like that. And if you think about it, you know, many people that may be compromised and have a hard time getting out to their grocery stores or whatever, and maybe they do go to the stores occasionally, and they can be diagnosed and go to the healthcare clinics that are associated with the stores, and then the Walmarts of the world can actually develop dietary plans for them, and then actually pick and deliver those goods to people's homes to keep them in line and kind of tuned up. And we know how important nutrition is to people's lives, especially with the chronically ill, like with diabetes and things like that. So I think this makes a whole lot of sense, and not only supports their core business of retail, and I just think it's good for both consumers, but it, as well as the retailers and the tech sector. Now, at the same time, I think the other side of the question is, so what's that mean to traditional providers? I think the traditional providers have got to understand that there are going to be competitive threats in some of these areas for primary care, but they also have a very strong brand that they can support. Big traditional healthcare has done a very good job at training customers, training patients to understand if you want to go to a trusted and very capable entity, these are the folks who do it for a living and focus on it. I think also that the interface between the big box retailers, they know they can only go so far. And so you've probably seen several announcements recently where there have been traditional healthcare providers that are now partnering with Walmart to provide specialty type referral services and things like that. And this just makes sense. It's an evolution of the industry, which is taking convenience for consumers, and at the same time, the expertise and the proven healthcare providers that are in the traditional world, and kind of blending those together for the benefit of all.
Thanks for that, Vance. Kevin, private equity has been investing in healthcare delivery for some time now. Do you see PE's role in care delivery slowing down, staying steady, or picking up steam over the next decade? And what does that second state mean for traditional provider organizations?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Rosie. Our clients in the provider space and our contacts, they're no strangers to challenges, including, you know, new challenges that might show up in their backyard. But for some reason, private equity does really tend to scare folks. I mean, we hear comments like, "Oh, the smart money's here, finally. They're coming for our lunchbox in our own backyard. What do we do about that?" And as you know, Rosie, LEK has got a bit of an advantage here just from a perspectives angle, because we do serve the private equity community quite extensively, both in transaction and strategy support. And so an understanding of how investors may think about opportunities in the healthcare space and within a given market, specific metro area as well. I think for providers that are, you know, seeing activity in their footprint, or if they haven't yet, they surely will. I guess so, to directly answer your question, we don't see it slowing down. We see it continuing and probably picking up steam over the medium and even the long term. We'd like to see providers see this as an opportunity and not a threat. So for sure, this is an example of what you said at the top of swim lane hopping. But what private equity often brings, in addition to, you know, obviously, you know, some dollars and some investment backing potential, is a discipline around establishing and growing economically sustainable businesses. And that is very much aligned with what we think health systems, scaling physician groups, other provider entities need to also be thinking about to make sure that they are sustainable for the long term. So are there partnership opportunities here? Yeah, we do. We think so. What could that look like? It could be, you know, partnerships directly that help health systems extend into new sites of care, or new types of partnerships that are facilitated by private equity with primary or specialty groups in the metro area. It could be around new models that support care delivery, be those physician practice models, managed service organizations, or other types of models that are more direct to patient. And it could be around technology, of course. That is an area that continues to be very fast moving in healthcare, one that has a lot of attention from the private equity community, and one which really can't succeed without the involvement of the folks that are closest to the patient, which of course is the provider community. So a common theme here throughout the topics that we've touched on, but this is a potential threat if you ignore it. But it is also a potential opportunity to think through how to potentially play these changes and partner with these new entrants in a way that could be mutually beneficial and certainly beneficial for patient and member communities.
Great, Kevin. Vance and Fraser, returning to you. MA has been a part of the healthcare provider landscape, but we have been seeing some interesting cross-regional healthcare systems emerging this year. Should we expect to see more?
Yeah, I think we should. You know, one of the things I think we will see is maybe some of these merger activities miss expectations. Unfortunately, that tends to happen oftentimes in the provider world. But I think it does make sense. Most industries, as they mature, you see consolidations. Those consolidations lead to the synergy opportunities. And I think that's where a lot of the benefit will ultimately come out of. Back office optimizations should be a big focus. One of the things I was kind of surprised with when I started looking at some things in my own healthcare provider, as many as 44% of our staff was actually non-clinical in nature. And when you think about providers providing clinical services, you would think that you would have a higher concentration of clinicians versus back office support people. So the areas of finance, HR, supply chain, IT, I think are ripe for consolidation synergies and automation. So those are a couple of areas that I think are big opportunities. And then it's a matter of, can cultures actually be migrated together in a way that actually pulls it off?
Yeah, I think that's well said, Vance. And this is an interesting area of swim lane hopping that we don't usually think about as swim lane hopping, but healthcare delivery has for a long time been very locally bound. And seeing health systems hop from one geographic swim lane to another is a somewhat new phenomenon. Although we have seen those that have tried it struggle to extract the synergies that they expect to get out at the beginning, in part because of the cultural reasons that Vance just mentioned. And it's just difficult to operate at a central level in two or three very disparate markets. What I think is really interesting as an angle on this regional swim lane hopping is more nimble and efficient options to hop your geographic swim lane and expand your geographic reach. Strategies like the MD Anderson Cancer Center's network approach, a partnership that brings the secret sauce of one health system to another health system or provider organization somewhere outside of their core home geographic region, and allows a win-win to develop, bring clinical expertise in a specific area to a new market and attract new patients while expanding the geographic reach of the organization that's providing that clinical expertise. And I think we'll see a lot more of that activity. And I think there are a lot more opportunities out there for that type of cross-regional health system partnership and collaboration. And it's an area that we're really enjoying helping our clients think through.
These are some really great insights from our panel of experts on the future state of provider. Vance and Kevin, what should provider organizations start doing today to set themselves up for success in 2035 as swim lane hopping continues to evolve?
You know, I think there's several things. Let me just kind of go down a short list here, but I really think they need to rationalize their service lines. You know, healthcare providers for so long have almost been in an arms race with the competing hospital down the street. And I think they no longer can afford to do that. They've got to spend their capital much more strategically to find what they're really good at and then focus and go deep into those particular areas. I think they also have to continue to unify their brand, especially within a market. Fraser had mentioned earlier that it is being such an important thing is this. They need to continue to solidify that brand with trust, respect, and capabilities, because those are the things that we as consumers of healthcare really are looking for in providers. And you know, most providers provide really cradle-to-grave capabilities. And as such, they need to build that trust at all levels. As mentioned earlier, the back office automation and simplification, the provider world, and I'd say healthcare in general, it's too complex for what it should be. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to drive cost out and also improve operations. So I would encourage that in any healthcare provider to have a big focus. And then they also need to decide, are they going to try and win the home care market? Because I think healthcare has left the building. And as such, they've got to decide, are we going to be the place that people come to, or are we going to take our technology and go to where the customer is? And oftentimes that can be in the home. And we've seen virtual care be very successful during COVID. And now it'll be, although it's retracted a little bit, we need to decide, is that how we're going to provide future services? And I think that's also an area that you're going to get a lot of competition from some of the more innovative sectors of the market.
Yeah, Vance nailed it as usual. And what we think in terms of how to approach this, what we think providers need to do and what we've seen works well in our advisory at LEK for clients is an art and science approach, and perhaps starting with the science. I've been recognizing healthcare as a locally delivered service, as has been mentioned, understanding the dynamics today and going forward within your local market or markets. And then not shying away, though, from some creativity around what new partnership models could look like. And we've mentioned a few examples, you know, throughout this podcast about changing threats into opportunities. And that's really where we think providers have an opportunity to change the game and change their own trajectory in terms of the breadth of services, the breadth of revenue streams that can sustain them going forward. And we see no shortage of opportunities. And that's kind of the underlying point here across our podcast series. It's taking a diligent, fact-based, but yet also creative approach to how to prioritize those opportunities and where to place your bets that we think will best set providers on a solid footing for years and years to come.
Vance, Fraser, and Kevin, thank you for joining me to discuss the second installment of Looking Ahead, the U.S. Healthcare Provider Landscape in 2035, entitled Swim Lanes. Please stay tuned for further installments in the Provider Landscape 2035 series, and reach out if you would like to schedule a discussion regarding these topics and potential implications and strategies for your organization. We invite you to connect with us to learn more about LEK Consulting's extensive experience in providing strategic support to U.S. healthcare services organizations. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, our listeners, for joining us today at the Insight Exchange, presented by LEK Consulting. Links to resources mentioned in this podcast can be found in the show notes. Please subscribe or follow for future episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, we encourage you to submit your suggestions for future insights online at lek.com.